I'm Gary Nolan. I'd like to welcome you to this program. You're listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. A single theme to begin our program with one guest going in depth. A special broadcast on ALEC, A-L-E-C. We're going to go into depth on this, and let us begin. My guest standing by from Madison, Wisconsin is Lisa Graves. She is the Executive Director of the Center for Media and Democracy. They publish PR Watch, Source Watch, and Bankster USA. She previously served as a senior advisor in all three branches of the federal government, as leading strategist on civil liberties advocacy, and as an adjunct law professor at one of the top law schools in the country. Her former leadership posts include a Deputy Assistant Attorney General at the U.S. Department of Justice, Chief Counsel for Nominations for the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, and Senior Legislative Strategist for the American Civil Liberties Union on national security and surveillance policies. She has testified as an expert witness before both the Senate and House and has frequently appeared as an expert across the different radio and television networks. And the Center for Media and Democracy recently obtained documents outlining over 800 bills vetted and approved by major corporations along with Republican officials who comprise the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. Now, it's been discovered that these bills are designed to rewrite state laws and target just about every area of American life. So when major corporations find that it's in their interest to privatize the prison system, well, how can they do that? They have to have people in those cells. Well, how do you get people in a prison cell? Why don't you put them in there for 20 years for having a small amount of marijuana? In some cases, in some states, that's the law. They also don't like unions or workers' rights. They don't like civil liberties. They don't like corporate oversight. They don't like health care. They don't like utility taxations. For all of these, they have the power to change the legislation. Let us say hello now to Lisa Graves to take us on this journey of understanding. Nice to have you with us today, Lisa.
Oh, thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me on.
First, let's begin with just the basics. Most people are of the impression that their state legislators, when they bring a bill to in a committee or a law into a state, that it's meant to help the citizens, the constituents. If they're going to change any law, it's because to better protect the citizens. Now you're telling us that after this investigation, over 800 pieces of legislation were proposed. You'll tell us how many actually passed in some form that did not represent the needs of the citizens of a given state, but rather these special interests working behind the scenes, all with non-transparency, so that your legislator would come out looking as if they were really doing something. And since the average person doesn't know diddly squat about what goes on in their own state capital, it's a very arcane process. Most people have lives to live and don't pay attention to what's happening until it's long after the fact. Take us step by step through this entire process to show us whether or not this is ethical, moral, legal, or not, and what have been the consequences. The forum is yours.
Well, I think a lot of people have learned about how a bill becomes a law through their high school or college civics classes. And, you know, while I think most Americans understand that there is a certain amount of lobbying that does go on by various special interests, what ALEC is very different than what anyone really may expect happens. I'm someone who's been in government and also has been a lobbyist, and I have, for instance, asked for legislators to consider changes to make the Patriot Act less harmful to civil liberties. And some members were interested in those changes and some members were not, but I've never gone into a meeting or gone to some resort where I've actually been given an equal vote to legislators on proposed changes to the law. And that's what really happens through ALEC. So ALEC is an organization that was founded about almost 40 years ago, and it's really flown below the radar screen for most Americans. The most famous ALEC in America isn't the American Legislative Exchange Council, but ALEC Baldwin. And there's a lot of things that people need to learn about the other ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. ALEC is an organization that has, it says that it has almost 2,000 legislators as members, and while it describes itself as the largest nonpartisan and independent group of legislators in the country, in fact, over 98% of its revenue, which is about $7 million a year, over 98% of its funding comes from corporations and sources other than those legislators. So really, ALEC is a corporate lobby, in the words of my colleagues at Common Cause. What it is a corporate bankrolled organization that pushes a corporate agenda in the states through these legislators. And how that happens is that ALEC gives what it calls scholarships to your state legislator to travel to a resort in another state, to meet behind closed doors with corporate lobbyists in meetings where the press and the public is not allowed to be. And in those meetings on ALEC task forces, corporate lobbyists and state elected officials, politicians, actually vote as equals on templates to change our laws. So to date, they've voted on well over 850 bills as model bills, as ideal bills to be passed in the various states. And each year, ALEC has bragged and boasted that in the 50 states in the country, over 1,000 ALEC bills get introduced across those 50 states, and at least 20% of them become law, meaning they become legally binding on the rest of us. And yet most of us have never heard of ALEC, and that's in part because ALEC claims it doesn't lobby, which is quite shocking given the documentary evidence that we have and that others have. And so ALEC doesn't disclose its role to state citizens through public filings showing its influence on these bills. But privately, ALEC boasts to its corporate members that their agenda advances because of ALEC, because these bills are pre-approved by ALEC corporations and ALEC politicians behind closed doors. And then many of these legislators come back to your state house and introduce these bills cleansed of any reference to the fact that they were pre-voted on by corporate lobbyists sitting as equals, unelected, unaccountable corporate lobbyists sitting as equals with your elected state official, and then ratified by ALEC's board as an ideal or model bill for the nation. And so we've been shining a spotlight on that through our website, ALEC Exposed, ALECEXPOSED.org. And we have been working to highlight ALEC's role in a number of very controversial measures that make us less safe and that harm our economic prospects as a people.
I appreciate that overview. Does it only relate to the state legislatures, or is it also in any way involve pushing laws at the federal level?
Well, that's a great question. ALEC has, it's sort of in some ways, if you were differentiating between the federal system and the state system, some of these state legislators are kind of like the farm team or the minor leagues in some respects to the major leagues of Congress. And so what happens is that ALEC sort of gets its clutches on state legislators, and as those state legislators grow in power and sometimes run for Congress, they have already been sort of invested in through the ALEC process and have been inculcated, have been spoon-fed these policy positions and arguments, and then they end up in the legislature. And right now, in the United States House of Representatives, the two most powerful men in the United States House of Representatives are ALEC alums. That's John Boehner and Eric Cantor. So there are ALEC alums in the federal legislature who are advancing the ALEC agenda there. And there are also ALEC alums in the governorships. Scott Walker of Wisconsin, the notorious governor of my home state, is an ALEC alum. John Kasich of Ohio is an ALEC alum. The controversial Mitch Daniels of Indiana is not an ALEC alum, but he's been an ALEC cover boy, featured for advancing the ALEC agenda in his state. And Jan Brewer, just to name a few. Jan Brewer of Arizona, who's pushed a lot of ALEC bills into law there, is an ALEC alum. And so ALEC's influence is both at the state level and the federal level. Most recently, at the federal level, ALEC has been pushing an agenda which they call the EPA train wreck. And they have been opposing the regulation of carbon and carbon outputs by factories. And they've also been opposing any effort by the EPA to protect us from the dangers of coal ash, this enormous, enormously contaminated byproduct of coal burning. There have been major industrial accidents in the U.S. with a coal ash sludge that struck a city in the south and just devastated it. And it's not just the potential for the coal ash to sort of break free from where it's confined, but its ability, the ability of the substances to basically migrate into our water supply. And so that bill, a resolution and bill that ALEC had proposed at the state level to prevent coal ash regulation was headed to law in the United States Congress, and it was just stopped this past week through the intervention of a couple of members who were very concerned about that agenda. And so while they were almost able to succeed in their agenda in stopping coal ash regulation, at the very last minute that was blocked.
You have background in law and in prosecution, in government oversight. Could you explain to me the difference between government agencies or their agents and policymakers within government agencies meeting privately with major corporate interest, and tell me how that is not fascism?
Well, I have worked on criminal policy. I haven't been a prosecutor, although I worked at a prosecutor's office before in my career. And, you know, I think it's really deeply troubling because while it is the case that lobbyists do meet with members, members of Congress and members of the state houses, they'll call on their offices just like you or I could go to an office and request a meeting with a legislator. This is very different because in this process, ALEC provides a forum. It's a procurer, in essence, of a forum for legislators and lobbyists to meet behind closed doors and vote as equals on potential changes to our laws.
But we didn't vote them into office. We gave them no power. We know nothing about them. How can someone vote as an equal on a law within a state if no one in the state knows the person, knows that they are bringing their agenda to the table, and in effect, the legislators are merely joining with them in bringing something forward when we don't know the other half of the person involved?
Well, it's quite shocking because even though the law is not changed yet, it's not binding at the time that it comes out of the ALEC process, the fact is we've seen in state after state that what happens is when an ALEC majority takes hold in a state, as it took hold in Wisconsin, what you have is ALEC legislation that's introduced in the state house. The process for hearing is given very short shrift. Amendments are typically voted down. Not even a comma is permitted to be changed, and the bills become law. And so while it is in fact the case that the bills aren't law at the moment that the corporate lobbyists vote as equals with the politicians on the model bill, what we've seen in state after state is that these ALEC legislators are putting that bill forward and not allowing it to be changed through the hearing process or the markup process, which is the process by which amendments are added to a bill to ameliorate problems or to help deal with things that weren't thought of that citizens in the state may have raised in a hearing. In Wisconsin, for example, on the changes to the rules for Wisconsin citizens who were injured or killed by corporations, the ALEC majority in the state, the Republicans who were in charge of getting that bill through, voted down or tabled every single Democratic amendment to protect Wisconsin citizens after a single hearing that was allowed on that bill that dramatically changes the rights of Wisconsin citizens.
Then,
and that's happened in other states as well.
But did those Democrats in your state bring to the media's attention that these Republicans who were voting for it, A, did not create it. It was created by an outside lobbyist for corporate special interest. And then, in effect, they were pimping for major corporate interest. Sorry to put it in such a crass way, but I don't see any other way to state it. Did they stand up and say, these are not bills that the legislators within Wisconsin came to a decision on their own? These were given to them, coached, written, polished, and then brought forward as if this was of their own input, and it wasn't. Did they do that?
No, and that's because no one knew. No one knew. And so this happened last January here in Wisconsin. It happened in many other states. No one knew really which bills were ALEC bills until we received a tip from a whistleblower, until a whistleblower contacted me with these bills. And I worked with my team at the Center for Media and Democracy and made those bills widely available and analyzed them so that people could understand what the bills were about. And so only since last summer have other legislators, have the press and citizens been able to actually compare what bills have been moving in our state houses this past year and before then with the ALEC model, and be able to see that those bills were bills that were are echoes or identical to ALEC legislation. And so only in the last year have people been able to document those connections and disclose them and try to stop bills because of those connections.
I'd like to go back almost 20 years. At that time, I was receiving calls from a few individuals within New Jersey and New York and Connecticut, within the range of the radio station I was on, both on ABC Radio Network, as well as WBAI, the non-commercial radio program. And I was being told, Gary, there's a law that's imminent that's going to mean that unless you're a registered dietitian, you will not be able to practice nutrition in this state. And I thought, that's strange. Well, okay, are you talking about if you're a nutritionist from a diploma mill? No, we're talking about a legitimate Harvard PhD. You would not be able to practice and call yourself a nutritionist. And yes. I said, okay, so I looked into it, and indeed I saw an egregious examples. Not only was it egregious in what it limited, but there are actually fines and severe penalties, legal penalties, if a person was fined in violation. So we met with some state legislators and asked them, come on the air and talk about this. And in New Jersey specifically, they did. Now, over the next 7 years, that same piece of legislation was brought up at least 6 times in each case, by very narrow margins. The people in my audience, in fact, the largest number of listeners in my audience are from New Jersey. They called, they lobbied, and the people won. And then one day, out of the clear blue, I get a call and say, well, they just passed it today. Now, no one knew, and I hadn't heard that it was being passed. I contacted the legislator who had been on our side before. And I said, what happened? And she said, well, she said, Gary, it comes down to this. The American Dietetic Association was all over this and had been from day one. And I needed to get a bill that I have passed. And the deal was, if I give my vote on this, they will give me their vote. And that's politics. I'm sorry. I wish it weren't so. The same identical bill popped up in all 50 states. But now they had one state to use as a template. I mean, almost instantly. And I'm thinking, how in the world would all 50 states know about what went on in New Jersey? How would they all have the same language in their bill? Who's driving this? And I couldn't get behind the scenes. All I knew is the American Dietetic Association, a contemptible organization that I hold in total disrespect because of all of its magazines. I have a whole catalog. I was going to bring a major class action lawsuit against the American Dietetic Association, and still may, and based upon how many people have become sick because of ads they have placed for products and foods that are wrong, and even their teaching. And being a registered dietitian, graduating dietetic school before I went on to my advanced degrees in nutrition and a PhD in clinical nutrition from Union Graduate School, I can tell you that there was no dietitian in the country, dietitianist, that I would have trusted with my health because their ads, sugar's good, not to worry, and all these things. And then you see the people sponsoring, giving money, the Coca-Cola and these other people. In any case, I didn't know about ALEC. Now, there is no question that when we look and see who are the ALEC companies, the sponsoring, there are all the companies, all the fast food companies. So it's simple. If you get legislation in there that only a registered dietitian can practice nutrition within a state, either free or fee, so even if you wanted to donate your time, you couldn't get away with it. and then they passed them. And some were egregious. I remember once in Ohio, I got a call from a woman who has a master's degree in clinical nutrition from UCLA. And she said, what do you suggest? I'm about to lecture in Ohio. And I was just informed that because I'm not a registered dietitian, I could actually be arrested and have a $5,000 fine. I said, well, where in Ohio? And she told me, I said, well, I'm from the high. I was born and raised in Parkersburg, and right across the Belpre Bridge is Ohio. And I also lived in Steubenville, Ohio, and I live in Weirton, West Virginia, across the river, and in Wheeling. I said, so find, you're only about 20 miles away from the border, cross over where they don't have that, and then give your lecture. And she's, well, how am I going to get the people to come to my lecture? And sure enough, when she went to the lecture, there were two people there, she said, with tape recorders and suits, listening to see if she gave any information. So she said, I'm sorry, the law is such here, I cannot give a free lecture on health in this hospital. So she asked the people who would join her, and they drove some 17 miles across the border, and in a church there, she gave a lecture to a far smaller audience, but it kept her out of trouble. Now, it's hard to imagine. I did a series of broadcasts with her at the time. It's hard to imagine that in a country that respects our First Amendment, that you could actually go to jail and be fined if you talk about health for free in one of these states. Now, that's got Alex's rotten, crummy, degenerate fingerprints all over it. And I believe we should be looking to see about bringing some class action lawsuits or some litigation. We've got to get these people into court so we can do discovery and see all their nefarious acts. In any case, we now know that the people who are behind this, why would you want a law that only a registered dietitian and not a nutritionist? Because a nutritionist today, they are more rounded. They look at exercise, environmental factors, stress factors, body-mind factors, quality of diet, and they absolutely reject any qualified nutritionist I know today. Absolutely rejects the standard American diet, high in fats. But a dietitian worships the crapple, you know, look at them. They're a mess. They're a mess intellectually. They're a mess physically. They give you a garbage diet. And in 1 year, I documented 50,000 Americans died of malnutrition they contracted in a hospital from dietitians. So on the one hand, you're not going to ever be told, don't drink your colas, don't eat your hamburgers, don't eat your french fries, don't eat your other food, and don't worry about disease. Just have your protein, fats, carbohydrates, and that's it. So you can start getting good nutritionists in there. Nobody will ever again go to a dietitian unless they're a holistic dietitian and went on and did additional studies. Your thoughts?
Well, I would love to look in to the record more to see about any links between the funders or donors to the American Dietetic Association and ALEC to see where that overlap is, because it's certainly the case that we've seen a number of corporations that are benefit from the sale of these, you know, very sugary drinks, who were members of ALEC. For example, earlier this year, Pepsi Cola and Coca-Cola both dropped out of ALEC. They said that they were only in ALEC because they were opposing beverage taxes, basically, that were being proposed in cities like New York and elsewhere to deal with this incredible outbreak, this tremendous plague of diabetes that is happening in the country. So they tried to claim that they were only in ALEC for that reason, and they shouldn't be held accountable for ALEC's legislation on the gun issue. For instance, the bill that passed in Florida that was cited to protect Trayvon Martin's shooter is a bill that was ratified by ALEC as a model bill after it passed. And was pushed in states across the country, and ALEC has been pushing for legislation to make it harder for American citizens to vote through restrictive rules on ID that are far more restrictive than many states already had on the books. And so, interestingly, those two major cola companies tried to say, don't hold us accountable for the gun legislation or the voting legislation, even though they were bankrolling ALEC for a number of years. They said, we were just in it for the sugary drinks that we didn't want regulated. And so there's just no doubt that in that area and numerous other areas, you have corporations that are pushing bills basically to protect their bottom line, but that don't necessarily have the interests of American citizens at heart. There are bills within the ALEC portfolio, so that if your state legislators are ALEC legislators and they say that you can't regulate GMOs, genetically modified substances, to say that you can't regulate certain pesticides, or to say that you can't limit the ability of these factory farms or factory farm industrial farming operations to be put in your neighborhood, so that you can't use your local government. You can't go to your city or your county and pass laws through local democracy to protect yourselves against these GMO products or against these pesticides or against having a nuclear plant sited in your backyard. So ALEC corporations are working to basically capture the state legislatures across the country in order to benefit the corporations that bankroll ALEC and make it more difficult for us to have real democracy and to have our voices heard, even at the city and county level, to protect ourselves if the state legislature sells us out.
Let's take a look at something you just mentioned in more depth. We're very concerned about the dangers, known dangers, proven dangers of genetically engineered organisms. No major media in the United States has reported on the 257,000 known suicides in India alone from farmers who have lost their land on the day their land is foreclosed on, when they could not repay the loan for that they took out on the genetically engineered seed, and now the crop doesn't bear what it needs. They just go into the field, take the pesticide, drink it, and lay and die. How do I know that? It's my new film. It's a harrowing picture to see someone who's told his family he's going to die, they're going to lose their land, and it's his way of showing his absolute and complete contempt for a system that is so corrupt. Well, we know that in India there's a class system and even a caste system in India that's more severe than anything we've seen currently in the United States, especially with the untouchables. And there's no help for these farmers, and yet Monsanto is the biggest promoter in India of genetically modified seeds. Now, when you look at Monsanto's background and you look at how many times they've been held accountable and paid fines, hefty fines, for acts that you and I, if we engaged in, we would end up in jail. And yet the American media has not touched the background of any of these corporations. Example, they haven't touched anything about the danger of genetically engineered organisms, how highly litigious Monsanto is about going after farmers, even farmers, organic farmers, who may have a seed from an adjacent farm dropped by a bird or wind or a storm onto their property, and then they say, oh, we're suing you because you have a seed that you didn't sign a contract for us, and end up winning, bankrupting the farmers. We have that in our film as well. Mm. And yet this very nefarious reputation is never brought up when these people have the power of the media to convince people and legislators that we need genetically engineered material. What could that end up doing at the state level through ALEC to allow them to have power over pesticides and power over genetically modified seeds and crops without any safety standards or consumer input or activist input in the entire United States? Give us your thoughts on that.
Well, we do know that Monsanto has been a member of ALEC in past years. We don't have the current list of corporations that are involved in ALEC, but we do know that they were definitely a member of ALEC in the past. And, you know, the things you've described are just shocking and horrifying. I think one of the biggest threats, quite frankly, to our food supply right now as a nation and as a people in the world is the fact that some corporations, a handful of corporations, literally are trying to control the seed storehouses for the planet and restrict which seeds can be planted, as you point out, and limit access to those seeds, and then basically promote their own seeds, many of which are genetically modified for a monoculture agricultural environment, which has the effect of, you know, really ultimately it has health effects, but also health effects for human beings, but it also has an effect on you know, the culture of a city or a country in terms of having producing things, like in the Philippines, having your sustenance crops basically phased out because corporations come in and insist on monoculture, like sugar beets, for example, to produce sugar. You can't live on sugar beets. You have to then basically get your food produce from someplace else, while all around you, you're surrounded by these crops that aren't really for your consumption, and are for export to someone else. Often those crops are genetically modified in ways that, I think, pose significant dangers. Both for agricultural diversity, but also, I think, you know, people have raised a number of concerns about what happens with the consumption of these products. And I think that from the standpoint of what ALEC has done in this area is, I think, really destructive of democracy, because, you know, your state legislature, many people don't even know who the state rep is who supposedly represents them in the state house. They're not often covered in the news. You know, a lot of the news coverage is based on Congress. And so I think people don't have a lot of contact with their state legislatures, but they do have some contact with their counties or their cities. In the city they live in. And so if your state house has basically been sold out to some of these big corporations and is doing the bidding of the big corporations, your only refuge may be in your city or your county to be able to say, not in our county, not in our backyard, are we going to allow these GMOs, are we going to allow these pesticides, these pesticide applications that, you know, these poisons to be spread on fields in ways that risk the health of our children, the health of our animals, the health of our plants in terms of them being covered with, these poisons that are blown onto the fields. The notion that you as a person in this country, as a citizen in this country, can't exercise local democracy to protect yourself through your local city or county from some of these dangers, that you'll be blocked in doing so by a state house that might be basically bought and sold by some of these corporations, is just, it's astonishing and outrageous.
Two more areas I'd like for you to address, if you would, please. One is the energy cartels, and what influence do you have, any evidence that they have participated to their benefit, especially the so-called oxymoronic clean coal movement and the mountaintop removal throughout Tennessee and Appalachia and West Virginia and Pennsylvania and Kentucky. Also the nuclear, the hidden nuclear subsidies, and the refrain that all nuclear is clean, it's inexpensive, and it's green. It's none of the above, but they're getting a lot of power, and we have a whole lot of difficulty closing any of these dangerous plants. And also with gas hydrofracking, especially on the Marcellus Shale, which goes through New York and Pennsylvania and Ohio, and where the governor of New York is going to open up gas hydrofracking on the poorest counties like Tioga County and the others bordering Pennsylvania, where the inducement or the sales pitch, we'll put these wells up, that won't be a problem, it's going to bring jobs, it's going to bring revenues to you, not realizing that when you look at the actual amount of revenues that they get, it's almost nothing. The amount of destruction and devaluation of the property, and hence the tax base, is substantial, and the pollution of the environment is almost it's one of the most devastating things you can do, with 200 different chemicals and millions of gallons of water pumped down these holes. What have they been doing, if anything, that you're aware of with ALEC?
Well, that's a terrific question. It's quite clear that ALEC is a major vehicle for these energy corporations, these polluting corporations, to advance their agenda. On the issue of coal, Peabody Coal, which is one of the largest privately held corporations in the world, and certainly is a major corporate entity in the world of coal. It's an ALEC member. It's also a state co-chair in some states in terms of pushing its agenda in particular states. And ALEC's agenda in this area is quite clear. ALEC has had numerous bills and resolutions that oppose the very idea that there's climate change is happening. It has pushed opposition to any measures to really deal with climate change, including even regional agreements among states to deal with greenhouse gases. And then last summer, sort of basically after we launched ALEC Exposed, they had a sort of a strange session in which they were sort of starting to pivot on climate change, because they had a session called Warming Up to Climate Change, How Increased CO2 is Good for You. And the fake expert who basically led that session for ALEC legislators to indoctrinate them on total disinformation actually suggested that because during the 20th century levels of CO2 output had increased, and at the same time lifespan had increased, therefore CO2 led to increased lifespan, which is just a shocking, basically a high school student level mistake in reasoning to call correlation causation. But the very idea that just because there's more CO2 we live longer is basically absurd on its face. But ALEC, through ALEC Corporations, has pushed this agenda, has bankrolled this agenda. The corporations that are heavily involved in ALEC over these past several years include Koch Industries, which is led by the Koch brothers, which is one of the largest privately held corporations in the world, and they're two of the richest men in the world. They're 23rd and 24th richest. If you combine their wealth, it's, basically the top 10 richest men on the planet in the history of the world, almost. And Koch Industries and a number of different aspects of the things they fund are longtime members of ALEC, including their group Americans for Prosperity and other entities. And then you have corporations like Exxon and BP, who are longtime ALEC members who have advanced ALEC's agenda. On the issue of nuclear power, it's quite clear that ALEC has been advancing the agenda of the nuclear industry. It has pushed to streamline the siting of nuclear plants and other power plants, so basically making it easier for them to put plants wherever they want. And they have pushed for resolutions expressing support for increasing the use of nuclear energy. On the fracking issue, which is, I think, perhaps one of the most underreported stories, and yet one of the most important stories in the past few years. That issue is just astonishing to me, in part because I know that they have worked hard to get bipartisan support for fracking. They've worked on the Obama administration, on the Bush administration. They've worked on Democrats and Republicans in the state houses to push forward this agenda. But what most Americans don't realize is that these wells, to get this so-called natural gas or methane gas out of the shale, spoils millions of gallons of water. Each well can spoil millions of gallons of drinkable water. Then that water is contaminated with the fracking fluids, the fluids used for the drilling, as well as some of the contaminants that are in the ground as they bore through, uranium or other radioactive rock. That water comes out contaminated. And then these companies, having taken your water, your drinkable water, to get this gas out, then inject that contaminated water into wells. And those wells, that water can travel back into our water system. And so they're basically taking out clean drinkable water for us, using it to drill these wells, and then they're putting that spoiled water back into the ground. It's astonishing. And I think if Americans understood the choices they were facing, water is a renewable resource, but it's not fully renewable. We're wasting and squandering enormous millions, if not billions, I think it's far closer to billions, of gallons of water on fracking. We just recently covered a story in Pennsylvania where a corporation, a water company, basically a for-profit water company, bought a mobile home park in order to take out millions of gallons of water from the Susquehanna River. Just steal the water, basically. Take it, claim that it's theirs for the taking for free, to pump off to use in drilling. And we're not being asked as a people what choice we would make between being able to drink water and preserve our drinking water and have these corporations have access to these natural gas wells. And the other piece that has not been told is a piece I've been working on for the last 3 years almost, since I first started looking at fracking. I discovered that the export rates for natural gas in this country are skyrocketing. And so what you have is people in this country being told that we've got to drill in New York and Pennsylvania in order to get this gas out for our national security. It's for our own national security that we access these wells. And what we see is that a significant portion of this gas that's being harvested that can't be stored easily for long periods. Once it's harvested, they want to use it. A significant portion of gas and an increasing amount every single year is being exported to other countries. So to conclude on that, what you see is a situation in which our natural gas resources, if we ever needed them in the future, are being tapped by corporations willing to sell that gas to the highest bidder while spoiling our water, spoiling billions of gallons of our water, and trying to put that contaminated water back into our water supply. It is an astonishing, outrageous circumstance, and Alec has numerous bills and has had numerous seminars dedicated to advancing the fracking agenda.
One last area, please, Lisa, and that is pharmaceuticals. Right now, Richard Gale, our executive producer, and myself, have completed 19 articles, major articles, on the subject of the safety and efficacy of vaccines. The latest by Dr. Nancy Ashley on my staff and myself was on Gardasil. What we did, we simply looked at the truth. Is Gardasil safe? Is it effective? Will it help prevent cervical cancer? And should it be given to all these young girls? Because it was being mandated by states, advocated and then mandated in all the states. When we looked at the science, including detailed descriptions of its lack of efficacy in science by the actual originator of it, as well as Cindy Bevington, the finest investigative journalist in the middle part of America who's won dozens of awards, she said that this is a complete fraud and went through she deconstructed it in great detail. And we wrote this story. Now, my question is, how is it that the same legislation mandating a toxic, dangerous vaccine that's killed at least 111 young girls and caused over 24,600 adverse reactions to be reported to the FDA, and we know from the FDA former commissioner's own statements that under 10% of all adverse effects are ever reported, so multiply 10 times 100, 10 times 25,000, you'll be more accurate in the amount of adverse effects and deaths. And yet, I sense, though I have not been able to prove, that because the members of the pharmaceutical company that make this vaccine, Gardasil, Merck, are a part of this ALEC movement to mandate this. Your thoughts?
Well, I have to say, I don't doubt your statistics. I just haven't researched it myself. But I do think that what you have happening at the federal and the state level, quite frankly, is a situation in which we have corporations that have captured the regulatory agencies in many respects. And so you have an FDA, a Food and Drug Administration, whether it's under Democrats or Republicans, that has a sort of revolving door in which corporations have their lobbyists or their representatives come in and out of that agency and affect the policies and what they are willing to approve. We know that Merck, which is now, I think it was Astra Merck, and now I think it's AstraZeneca and Merck, that they have been, that their entity was a member of ALEC's Health and Human Services Task Force, which was basically setting policy and creating model bills on issues of, involving drugs and access to medical care, including, you know, health care reform. I think that you have what we've seen in this country is that you have so many corporations that have so much influence both over the legislators and over the regulators that it's hard to know, it's hard to trust, and I think it's wise to not have trust, quite frankly, of some of the decisions of the FDA. You have a situation with the FDA in which virtually every week there's some drug that's recalled that they previously approved that has harmed people, that has killed people or severely injured them. Meanwhile, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, has pushed a bill that would bar you from suing if a drug was approved by the FDA. And so what ALEC wants to do is, in essence, in recognition of this industry capture, in many respects, of this federal agency, what they want to do is say that even if that agency subsequently recalls those drugs because they've harmed people, you can't sue. You're barred from suing them unless you can prove you have like some magic information that you can prove that they defrauded the FDA, that they hid information from the FDA. You know, good luck proving that. The fact is that that bill is designed to prevent you from holding those corporations, those multi-billion-dollar corporations, accountable for the damages done by their drugs. Whether it's in the case of a vaccine like Gardasil, which you've cited the statistics that you've observed, or whether it's in the case of a heart medicine or a contraceptive, what ALEC wants to do is make sure that you cannot recover if your child, your spouse, or your parent dies or is severely injured as a result of a drug just because it was approved by the FDA. You're out of luck. You're out of court.
I will add one additional one in, and if anyone would like to call in now and speak with Lisa Graves or myself, if you have experience with ALEC, whistleblowers or anyone who knows something about them at the state legislative level or concerned citizens, our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Now, one area that's of big concern to a lot of people is finance. Are you aware of any legislation that has occurred at the state levels to protect the bankers and the hedge fund companies, the equity partnerships, the speculators in commodities from oversight or repercussions for their actions? What role has ALEC played on behalf of the financial community?
Well, ALEC has played an extensive role in that area as well. ALEC has approved a resolution opposing the Consumer Financial Protection Board or agency, the CFPBA or CFPBC, which was the one major reform really that was passed after the Wall Street meltdown. So ALEC is on record opposing the creation of new regulations to protect American consumers in the wake of the gambling on Wall Street and the policies on Wall Street that just crushed and wrecked our economy. So they've opposed that, but they've done more than that. ALEC has a number of bills that basically protect some of the richest corporations in the world from regulation. And so they have opposed limits on usury or interest rates. Basically, they've opposed being able to put ceilings on credit card rates. They have opposed trying to have any caps on ATM service fees. They're in the pocket of the banks and of the financial services industry. The idea that there should be no limit on what interest can be charged or what fees a bank can charge is pretty astonishing. And in fact, they have other provisions that help. Help those industries in other ways. I mean, for me to look at their bills and see them oppose having a Consumer Financial Protection Agency, oppose having any limit on interest rates, oppose having any limit on ATMs is pretty outrageous. You have credit card companies that basically jack up your rates through some fine print, and you don't even know that they have necessarily have had the so-called right to do that, and you have no recourse. And what ALEC wants to do is to bar Congress and to bar the government at any level from being able to impose any caps or limits on those rates by credit card companies and by ATMs. And furthermore, they want to bar the ability to have a Consumer Financial Protection Agency to try to prevent some of the problems that led us into the financial crisis that we're all suffering from right now.
My last issue, if you would address, please, is a ethical issue. Having uncovered this, what has the mainstream media, what have the Democrats and Republicans said about this? And I don't seem to see that there's any major concern about reining in ALEC or the state legislators. It's not. It's a non-issue in the mainstream media.
Well, I think that the issue has been growing in force within the media. Certainly, the alternative media helped us with the coverage coming out of our launch of ALEC Exposed last summer. The Nation was the magazine that helped us to break the story, and other magazines have and newspapers and blogs, progressive outlets have worked to cover it. Democracy Now! Has covered it. Hartman and others.
Yeah, none of these are official media.
Well, I think, but I would say that what's happened in the last 2 months, 3 months, is that after the shooting of Trayvon Martin, after the terrible tragedy that happened in Florida, and people's awareness about the ALEC role in ratifying that law after it passed and saying it should be passed in other states, that has broken open a window of interest by the media. And so since that time, the ALEC issue has been covered on MSNBC a number of times, as well as on CNN and the CBS affiliate in Nebraska and other states have covered it. The New York Times issued a story. When we broke the story, the LA Times came out, but there was a long period of silence from the New York Times and from the Washington Post. But ultimately this spring, they published stories and have published now, the New York Times has published a number of stories about ALEC, which we're certainly pleased to see. Bloomberg Press, interestingly, has been one of the only newspapers that had or magazines that has had coverage of this since before we broke our story. Bloomberg has been critical of ALEC in its coverage, has been documenting ALEC's role, and that was a big surprise. But there are other places in which we haven't had that much success. We've had success, for example, getting the National Public Radio to cover ALEC, but the local public television stations, for the most part, have not covered it. And while a number of state newspapers, like the great New Jersey newspaper, have done their own exposés, a lot of state house reporters, a lot of state house reporting newspapers, like the Wisconsin State Journal here in my home state, or the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, have not covered ALEC in their print editions, in their news. We got our very first editorial last week out of one of the two leading newspapers in the state on ALEC, but we haven't seen coverage by state house reporters in a lot of states about which bills are ALEC bills, and that's been disappointing because people get their news from a number of sources, the evening news, a lot of people get their news obviously on the web, but a lot of people get their news only from the newspapers, and a lot of these state newspapers that cover the state house have been completely silent on ALEC bills in their states.
Lisa Graves, thank you very much, and for all the good that PRWatch.org does, that's the website, or Center for Media and Democracy. Thank you for giving us some really good insights into ALEC.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you so much for having me on. I always learn so much when I talk with you.
Thank you. All right. And we thank all of you for taking the time to listen to the Progressive Commentary Hour. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day.